Another day, another task, think fast with a whole nother mission complete.
Successful-ish.
Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see.
I'm successful-ish.
Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve.
Successful-ish.
Lose a stack, get it back, reinvest, hope with, then I roll up my sleeve.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Successful-ish. I'm Sarah Michelle. And today on the podcast, we are going to improvise, which if you've been listening for a while, you know is not my strong suit, that I love my security blanket of notes and thought out answers and responses. But today is all about improv. We are talking with improv guru Anthony Jensen. And I am really excited to dive into what exactly improv looks like, how this translates to life. Improvisation is often associated with comedy, but our guest today, Anthony Jensen, takes improv seriously. With graduate degrees in organizational leadership and business administration, Anthony started Improv Incubator to help teams and individuals listen and respond more genuinely. And I just finished my first 6-week improv class and can say for the record that it is possibly the most terrifying thing I have ever done. I don't know what it is about improv that just, even though we improvise every day, literally in every conversation, it's not like I bring a script when I'm talking to people at the grocery store or at work. There is something about being in a room and actually having to improv that's just pure Bambi and you forget how to talk. So our guest today, Anthony Jensen, is so good at being able to really work through that. And I'm excited to talk a little bit through some of those anxieties, which I know I'm not alone in having. I know many people have also expressed anxieties. So Anthony, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks so much for having me, Sarah. Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Of course. So before we jump into the conversation, what is something that you failed at this week?
Well, I didn't have to think too hard about it. I fail every day, of course, but I wanted to bring it back to something with improv. We had a show last week, and improv is something for me where it's like your highs will never be as high as your lows will be low. And you know, improv is a team game that we'll talk more about here as the conversation unfolds. But I always leave feeling like I could have better supported my teammates in our show. And I always can pull out like, one or two instances where I wish I could go back and better support them. And I feel like I failed them.
Yeah. It's hard when you're on the spot. I know the very first time I ever tried improv, it was a little like 2-hour workshop in Boston. And my takeaway was that I am exceptionally funny like 20 minutes after I need to be.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. You have time to think about it.
Yes. It's one of those things where you go through the whole scene and then you're done and you're moving into the next one and you're like, well, now it's just all right there perfectly in my head. That would have been the perfect thing to say. It's just, why can't it get there faster?
Exactly.
I feel like that's one of the toughest things. And especially like when you're doing improv with other people, it's not just you having to think of stuff. You're having to react and almost kind of be in the heads of the people that you're with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like a little bit of mind reading almost.
Yeah, you have to be, it's better if you have relationships outside of, improv with those folks. If you don't know them, you've never performed with them, you don't have any background with them, it does make it much harder. And because, trust, that's one of the main tenets of improv is you have to trust each other as performers and that they're going to have your back and that they trust you, that you have their back. And if you don't, it's going to be a messy show.
Yeah. So how did you get into improv? Where did this improv career come from? Because we should also share that you also have like full-time, I know we mentioned organizational development, like you teach, you're involved in the city, you have all kinds of stuff going on. So how did you get into improv and kind of walk us through what that looks like in your life?
Yeah. So for me, it started when I was in middle school and I came from a fairly artistic family, they were in, music and visual arts. And so I was encouraged to try out for the middle school play and got, you know, a larger role when I was in seventh grade. And I just wasn't, I don't know, I wasn't very good at memorizing lines. And I, at one of the performances, I skipped like a lot, like too much, where it prompted, you know, my mom to say, maybe we should look at something else, and signed me up for an improv camp, like a 3-day kind of camp, day camp. And I absolutely fell in love. What I loved the most was being able to control, one, the narrative of the story, and two, like when the audience had a reaction. Whereas like scripted theater, I never felt like I was in control. It always felt like, you know, the author had all of the control, and it just wasn't for me. And that's probably not fair, and lots of people don't resonate with that message. I mean, you know, it was good enough for Shakespeare, it's good enough for a lot of people. So once I did that camp, I was absolutely hooked, and I kept doing it throughout high school, and did it in speech, and we had a club. And then after college, I was like, well, I guess I'm not moving to Second City, so I guess my improv journey is done. And, you know, like I had aged out or something. And so I took a break from probably like 2006 until TCR, Theater Cedar Rapids, started an adult improv class in, I think, like 2015, 2016, somewhere around there. I went through all of their classes, tried out for their house team, started performing. And then, yeah, that has kind of developed into my own, this improv incubator that I started in 2018, kind of when TCR was winding down their improv offerings. I wanted to supplement, and then ended up replacing what they were doing. And so, yeah, we've kind of become the hub in Cedar Rapids, at least, for classes, workshops, and improv shows.
That's awesome. And I know, like, for myself, and I feel like for many people, when we think of improv, we think of something like, whose line is it anyway? And that's almost, you know, the only visual we have in our heads. And something that you have mentioned and are passionate about is that there's many different forms of improv. And I know, you know, whether it's improv for business skills or whether it's the more serious improv. So can you break it down a little bit? What exactly is improv? Like, if you were going to define it.
Yeah, improv dates back as early as the 300s BCE in ancient Rome. So it's a very old art form. And essentially, it boils down to acting without a script, where nothing is prepared. And, you know, they typically take suggestions from the audience, but not always. And then even within that, then there's kind of like two umbrellas within improv. There's the short form that you mentioned, the whose line is it anyway? And so those are short form games that take maybe 2 to 5 minutes. And they are like very punchline kind of driven, but it still requires all the same skills that we practice in improv. And then there's long form improv, and that is more story based, more character development. And that might be a situation where there's one kind of suggestion from the audience, and then that inspires a complete 30-minute show from the improvisers.
Yeah. So I have a question I want to talk through a little bit. Does improv have to be funny? Because I know that is the anxiety I hear all the time. I literally was just out with a girlfriend trying to talk her into doing a class with me. And she said, Sarah, my husband told me I'm not funny. Mm. And I said, well, you know, I can guarantee, like, not everyone in the class is funny either. Like, it's okay. You know, we all have our moments. But talk to us a little bit about that. Do you have to be funny to be an improv?
No, absolutely not. Like, the rules that we practice and the skills that we develop have nothing to do with being funny. That is a common misconception is that, you know, you need to be funny, or we get students that are like, well, everyone tells me that I'm funny, so I want to, like, I want to take an improv class.
Yeah, I think that that's one of the hardest parts. I was really thinking through, like, where's the anxiety coming from? And I was challenging myself with that, because those first couple of weeks of class, I don't think I said anything unless I absolutely had to. And that's not my normal. Anyone who knows me knows I'm actually quite outspoken. And for whatever reason, I just found myself, like, going back into my shell. And it really bothered me when I got home, of like, I knew I was going to be nervous, but why was I so nervous? And I think as I've started to talk to other people, and I've heard other people express their anxieties as reasons why they would never do a class. And I feel like when I tell people, oh, I just did an improv class, they look at me like with the same respect as if I just said, I've decided to fight in the war. Like, they look at me like, wow, that's so brave. Like, I could never do that. That's amazing. You're a superhero.
Yeah.
And we improv every day. Every day we have to have conversations. And so why is it that when we're in a class and someone asks a question and you only have to say one thing back, mm-hmm. you literally can't? And I think that a lot of times it is that fear of, well, what if I don't get it right? What if I'm mm-hmm. not in the head of the other person and I take it a different direction and I mess them up? And I think that that people-pleasing aspect was creeping up. So tell us a little bit about your perspective of when you're doing it yourself or when you're working with students, what is that balance between being able to show up as yourself and kind of relax, but also really be able to serve the people that you're with?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've brought up a really interesting point in that I think people are afraid to make mistakes, and that's really freeing in improv, because again, it's a theme that I'm going to hit on several times over our conversation. But if you're with a team or a group or a troupe or however you want to label it, and you trust all of them and they trust you, like, you can't make a mistake. Mm-hmm. And you won't make a mistake, because anything you say, they have your back. They're going to justify it. They're going to help make it make sense. And you're going to keep moving forward. You're not going to get stuck. You're not going to go backwards. You're going to keep moving forward. And it's one of the most freeing and liberating expressions of myself that I've ever been a part of. I think it's the most genuine art form that exists. And I think that once people go through the intro class, it like clicks, they kind of get it.
I think what was interesting for me was I feel like it's natural to go in and sort of size everyone up and kind of from the perspective of, all right, where do I fit in this talent pool? Like, I need to at least be solid center. I don't need to be the best, but I certainly can't be the worst. And so there's like this size up. And what I found was that I'm going to try to say this it's not going to come out well, but I'm just going to say, I really appreciated the people who sucked at improv, because it made me realize, like, they are not doing well right now, but it is okay. And the more that I had moments where I was like, that was not good, Sarah, like, mm-hmm. this is not your place to shine. But it was the more that I made mistakes, the more comfortable I became making mistakes. Mm-hmm. I feel like it takes away the sting. I think that sometimes we put such a dramatically high consequence mm-hmm. on mistakes that we make. And sometimes, like, if you're doing brain surgery, the stakes are high. You don't want to make a mistake. You really need to get that right.
Yeah.
If you are in a level one improv class on a Tuesday night, the stakes are pretty low if you mess up. Yeah. And so that was, for me, like, really freeing, because the more mistakes I made, I realized, like, this is not a big deal. Everybody still likes me. Yeah. Like, nobody died. It's okay. And we can all laugh and be better at it.
Yeah. You nailed it exactly. Like, that's my whole philosophy, is that it can be almost debilitating, the thought of making a mistake. And I think you touched on it earlier about people not wanting to sign up for a class or even going to a show because they think they're going to be pulled up on stage or something and like made fun of, maybe, I'm not sure, but and that's not the case. But if and like you experienced, we embrace the mistakes and realize that everybody makes them, and that they're not even necessarily mistakes. It was just like, maybe I didn't mean to do that, but other people are going to support it and make it make sense. Then it can be, incredibly liberating.
Yeah, there is so much anxiety about that. I think about being having everyone's eyes on you. I think that, I mean, for me, I feel like I podcast, I public speak, I have a decent amount of confidence, and I still absolutely froze up with there are eyes on me. What if I mess this up? And even just talking to people, trying to tell people about class, I heard a lot of those same anxieties of I won't even go to a show because I don't know if there's audience participation and I don't want to participate in those 2 seconds of what if I shout out the wrong location and everybody makes fun of me. And I think that I was reading this book recently that was talking about this Buddhist philosophy of the arrows, and basically like the first arrow that you get shot with hurts, but it's the second arrow that shoots you that does more damage. And it was comparing that second arrow with how we torture ourselves. Like we replay the moment over and over in our head, or we let the anxiety take over. And I think a lot of times that's the thing with mistakes, is that the mistake is one thing. Like it's embarrassing, it's an oopsie, but we replay that in our heads to the point that we just absolutely torture ourselves. And with it, something like improv, you have to move on very quickly. You can't dwell on it. So can you walk us through a little bit, like break down some of those practical steps on how to actually move past a mistake and not let it take over the scene?
I think that, again, it comes down to having those relationships with the people that you're improvising with and trusting that we're going to get through this together. And you're right, because I think about, the failure that I had in the last week with this show, and one in particular. I left someone on stage. It wasn't going anywhere, but I couldn't think of how to like end it or how to like add something to it that it needed. And so I've like let that, simmer with myself every day since. And I've like sent them a text like, "Hey, I'm sorry about that scene. Like, I just didn't know what to do." And they probably haven't thought anything about it, but I've really like let it kind of overcome me in these last few days. So, I think that it is about developing trust, and that's like the first two classes of our 6-week journey is just about that, like getting to know each other through exercises and exercises to help build that trust with each other. Because we had 16 people signed up. Most of the classes we would only have 14 people, but like that's a lot of people that you don't know and that you're forced to be vulnerable with. And so that's part of it too. The hardest part for the class, I think, is signing up. Once you're signed up, once you get there, you go through the door and you see that everybody's kind of in the same spot. Everybody's in the same position. Don't know what to expect. We, the instructors, are asking you to be vulnerable, to do things that push you outside of your comfort levels. It kind of forces you to trust the other people if they're doing the same thing.
Yeah, which can be tough. I feel like there's multiple dynamics going on there. There's the aspect of you need to trust that you're safe in this new tribe, which I think is just an instinctual, challenging thing. And that for me is my biggest anxiety is walking into a room where everyone knows each other and I'm the outsider. And like, we can unpack that in a different conversation, but that is where I just absolutely clam up. So something like a networking group or even improv where there were married couples, there were people who came with friends, that immediately puts guards up of what if they are all at their work lunch tomorrow talking about how awful I was because I came up with the wrong response. And so there's that anxiety to push through, like, is this a safe group? But I also think to be able to trust others and feel safe in others, there's this aspect of needing to feel safe within ourselves.
Yeah.
That feels like the biggest challenge is, can I trust myself enough to know that I am doing the best that I can do and I can stand behind even if I make a mistake?
Yeah.
And I feel like that was the coolest thing to see across 6 weeks was not just the trust, like the friendship that, like, genuine friendship that developed between everyone, but the confidence that came from self-trust of people kind of letting down those barriers and just going for it and trusting that their perspective was going to be okay.
Yeah.
What has your experience been like for yourself, but also with teaching beginner classes? You get to see this over and over. Like, what what's that general evolution or process look like from the first time someone steps into improv to the time that they complete a course?
Yeah, it is a long evolution, and I wish that I could have students, you know, write a letter to themselves, but it just feels so hokey because I think about, like, so we finished our 6 week class on a Tuesday. I sent the follow-up email on a Wednesday saying farewell and, you know, let's stay in touch, that kind of thing. And then immediately after, I craft the new email to the students that are starting the next Tuesday. And I had already gotten like 6 responses from the farewell email. Like, oh yeah, like, I had a really nice time, or thank you so much, or I can't wait for what's next, etc. And then, like, I still haven't gotten a response from the new email for the new students. And I know that they're having all the same feelings that every other improv class has. And I wish that you could just break through it faster. But I also appreciate that process that, like you said, everybody comes in, maybe they're sizing each other up, maybe they feel like, you know, that they have like a little imposter syndrome, like, I don't belong here, I'm not funny, I'm not good at theater, I'm not loud, I'm not attractive enough, I'm not this or that, you know, like all these things. And so it really is those first 2 weeks especially is just about building a safe space, like really establishing that we, the instructors, are going to do whatever it takes to make this a safe place, that everybody is welcome. And then, you know, we're going to learn some skills along the way. And everybody's evolution, like individual, is different. Some people come away with it and, you know, they don't feel like they have the skills to be an improviser. But I know that everybody's listening skills, their communication skills have improved through the exercises that we've done.
Well, I think that's a big piece of what holds us back often in life is just the labeling and feeling like, well, I can't take an improv class because that's for performers. Like that's for, and even I'm always challenged when I catch myself generalizing or stuck in stereotypes. I try really hard to have an open mind, but I still catch myself sometimes like walking into an improv class and being like, these don't look like creatives. You know, we had a couple that looked like they belonged in theater, but there were like engineers and IT people and people who work for the city, just like normal everyday people. And I think sometimes that's something that holds us back from pursuing something, as we feel like an imposter if we don't fully identify with the stereotype that we assign to that label. When the reality is that everybody is somewhat of a performer. Everybody improvises every day. Everybody is creative in some aspect. Everyone is logical in some aspect. So walk us through, like, what are the fundamental things that are learned through improv?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'll start out by saying that, you know, the way that I've structured the class sequence, the intro class is not, there's no performative outcome there. Like, it is intended to be a 6-week introduction to the art form of improv, where anybody can take it. It's developed in a way that it's supposed to be sort of a social class, you know, where we do have like fun. There's not a lot of individual feedback of like, you know, you need to work on this or think about that. It's just like, we're just trying some stuff and giving you some things to think about, right? And then what was your main question though? Sorry.
What are the fundamentals that are taught? Because it's not necessarily here's how to be good on stage.
Yeah.
So what are those foundational pieces?
So I'll talk about the rules that we focus on with Improv Incubator. We use the rules that Tina Fey uses because I think that they're, one, they encompass everything, and two, they're simple and easy to remember. So there's only four. Her first rule is to say yes, right? You accept what your scene partner or what the group has established. Her second rule is to say yes and, to not only accept it, but to add something to it and build upon it, keep it moving forward. Her third rule is to make statements and avoid questions. Questions usually gum up a scene or an interaction in improv and also in like the real world. And then her fourth rule that we've kind of already talked about is that there are no mistakes, only opportunities. And again, that's just a very freeing rule, especially when it's one of four, you know, it's a quarter of her rules, that there are no mistakes. And so I love all those. So those are the four main things that we focus on with Improv Incubator that we want students to know, and we want students to be able to come away with at the end of 6 weeks and be able to both articulate and sort of demonstrate through various games or activities.
So I want to walk through those a little more. So the mm-hmm. yes and, mm-hmm. that is one of those concepts I think that everyone has heard of, but when you're in the moment, it's very difficult. I think a lot mm-hmm. of us found ourselves being quite literal and saying yes and that was that. And mm-hmm. like still killing the scene, even though it was yes and. So walk us through, like, what does that mean? What's an example of saying yes and furthering mm-hmm. the communication along?
Yeah. Yeah. And that is the one thing that most people have heard of when they come in is yes. And it's really just, it's about building ideas instead of blocking them. And this means like better communication. So when I do corporate workshops or when I'm doing these, you know, these community improv classes for adults, that's like the primary thing. So it's listening to other people's perspectives. It's active listening, and it's not just waiting for your turn to talk, right? So a practical example that I give is if someone were to say to me, you know, Susan, you look amazing. I can't believe you're 8 months pregnant. What's your secret? If I just say, thank you, that's saying yes, like I've accepted it, but I haven't really moved it along, right? If I say, oh, thank you, yeah, I have been running a marathon every day. Now that's pretty wild and kind of crazy, but I've accepted what they've given me, that I'm pregnant, that I look amazing. And then what I've added on is that I'm running every day. Now this scene or this situation really has somewhere to go. We've got some more things to explore.
So in real life, to translate this, because I feel like this is something that can be challenging. I feel like we a lot more, no, but in mm-hmm. real life. And mm-hmm. so how do we move something further along when it's not necessarily what we were thinking? Like, what are some ways Because even in improv, you know, we might have an idea in our head of where we want to take a scene. Mm-hmm. Partner doesn't get it and they take it a totally different direction. And it can be challenging to kind of pivot and run with that when mm-hmm. that instinct is that, no, like we're supposed to be at a beach and you just took us to the skate park, like right. come back to the beach. Mm-hmm. So practically in life, how do we get past that if we don't necessarily, if we don't align, how do we start to sync those visions together?
Yeah, it can be tricky. I think that it's a good idea to remember that, you know, we're trying to work together, right? When I'm watching students and they might say the words yes and, but they are no butting. It's a very natural instinct, I think, for us. We want to come away with, or we want to show that we know more. And I think that some people try to do that by saying no. And like the real world application is like on a team for work or something, and someone comes with an idea of like, I want to try this project. I did a corporate workshop with bankers one time, and one of the young people asked, okay, so if my client asks, can I have this loan interest-free? I have to say yes. And it's obviously, hopefully, no, you don't have to say yes. Tina Fey calls them rules, and who am I to question Tina Fey? But there are guidelines, right? There are times when it is the right thing to do to say no. But the question to ask yourself is why is this customer asking for an interest-free loan? Are they able to get that somewhere else? Do they feel that the services that I'm providing are not adequate for the fees that we're charging? Do they not understand why we're charging these fees? Like, the idea of improv is, I haven't thought about that possibility yet. How can I help to make that work? And that is a big shift for, I think, a lot of folks in the way that they think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest challenges for me was in not asking questions, because I feel like that is what we're taught so often with communication of, you're supposed to ask questions. That keeps people talking. You're not supposed to give statements because that closes it in or it leads. And then you switch gears and you realize, well, actually, sometimes questions can muck up a conversation because it makes someone have to think. It doesn't make it as easy as fostering, kind of just feeding it along. So walk us through a little bit of what, like, the sentiment behind making statements versus questions, and how we can make those open-ended statements where we are, it's not a question, but we're still encouraging the other person to come back and engage in the dialogue.
Yeah, I agree that is one of the biggest obstacles with new improvisers is getting caught in just asking questions. And again, Tina Fey calls it a rule. It's more of a guideline. There are questions that can move a scene or a situation forward, but her philosophy is that yes, questions do gum up or muck up a scene. They get in the way of moving things forward. And whereas a statement, it just provides information. You know, when you say a statement, it doesn't require the other person to answer it. It's just more information, and more information is and should be helpful to the situation.
Yeah, I think it was funny that first little workshop that I did. I think it was that three line back and forth where. Yeah. Someone says a line, someone else has to respond, and the other person has to end. And the woman leading the class was so patient. And she had just given us this big talk about don't ask questions. And immediately we come out like, so what do you think about the weather? Like asking a question. And then we would get through the scene. She'd be like, okay, good job. But remember, like, don't ask questions, make statements. Mm-hmm. And then the next person would get out there and be like, so how about them Yankees? And just like another question, like we could not help ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the most challenging things, I think, is slowing down our brains enough to where we're processing what's happening. And it's this balance of not overthinking, but not underthinking. Mm-hmm. I think you can't underthink. You have to be paying attention. You have to be thoughtful. You have to be kind of present to know where you're at in this dialogue you're having. But also you can't overthink to the point where you're making it all about you. And I'm not hearing what anyone else is saying because I'm so busy stressing over what I'm going to say next.
Right.
So walk us through a little bit. How do we slow our brain to just the right pace to be able to kind of think with an appropriate amount of thinking?
Yeah, I think that pausing is okay. I've paused several times and you might edit some of it out, but I think it's okay to give ourselves time to think about what we want to say. That's a normal part of daily dialogue. I don't think that's a problem with improv, but yes, people do feel pressure to always be quick. And we play games in improv classes and in practice to try and help speed up our brain and trust our instincts and again, trust that our teammates are going to have our back and support whatever it is we say. So a lot of the things, you know, we talked about the evolution of, you know, personally, what that can look like, but it is like also dependent on the people that you are playing with, right? Like we want to trust ourselves. We want to trust our brain that we're going to say the quote unquote right thing. But more importantly, or just as importantly, maybe, is that we can trust the other people that they're going to have our backs with whatever it is we say. So taking that extra time to make it a statement and getting away from those questions are helpful. Because like when you talked about the Yankees, like it's going to be much more interesting to say a statement about the Yankees, right? Like, I'm so tired of seeing the Yankees win, right? That's just more interesting than how about them Yankees, right? Like now we've got somewhere to go, right? Like I have a perspective. I have a point of view.
Yeah. How do you feel like improv translates into your everyday life? Because I feel like we've talked a little about trusting the people in the group and sort of being, I think it's still challenging, but it's helpful to know here's the rules we've all agreed upon working within. We are in an environment where we all agree that we are learning and working towards this. If you are pitching a client or in a business meeting or out on a date or just kind of in the everyday world, you have no idea what rules that other person is operating within, which can feel very scary. So what are some ways that we can sort of pull improv into the real world?
Yeah, it does feel sometimes like cultish to talk about improv to people that are not improvisers, but I really do think that the rules and the way that we practice the rules can change the world for the better. And so, yes, when I'm, you know, I teach for my day job, I have, you know, a partner and we live together. I'm a parent, I'm a step parent. And so, yeah, and we all have different and varying relationships, you know, day to day. And I'm not perfect, you know, with these rules. But I do try and reflect on, am I practicing these regularly? And sometimes not as well as I want to, And regardless of if, you know, the person that I'm in a relationship with, if they're practicing them or not, it doesn't prohibit me from still practicing those rules and, you know, trying to make it work, right? That's like the essence of it. I haven't thought about it this way. How can I help make that work? And I believe that if you model it both on stage or, you know, in a personal relationship, that other people will catch on. You can only go so long of being a solo performer before you've got to, you know, kind of check yourself and get in with the group.
Yeah. Do you feel like there's a difference between adults and kids? Because I know you work with kiddos, you have kiddos. Like, is there a difference of that confidence?
Absolutely. Kids, when they improvise, they have no inhibitions. They're just ready to go. You explain the rules and you don't even have to ask for a volunteer. They've just like started doing it. They're much quicker. Because they're not like self-conscious, like, oh, well, this wouldn't make sense, or this wouldn't be funny, or other people will judge me. They just say it. So that's one. Two, they are much more physical, in their performance. And I'm like, man, was I ever like that? I'd like to think that I was, but I'm not sure. And you know, when we have our shows, I mean, we have wide range of ages performing, 50 down to, you know, 21, I think, is one of our improvisers. And I improvised with her at a show and she was like on the floor crawling through chairs, you know, and I was just like, oh my gosh, that's wild. But I'm so glad that you're doing it, you know? Yeah. So those are like the two biggest differences that I see.
Yeah. It is like, as you get older, I think those inhibitions kick in. And I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's that we just perceive more risk. If there is more risk, you know, you don't want to say something wrong and lose your job, or say something wrong and upset a romantic partner. I think that there's a lot of that gets in the way of really trying to appease. And I feel like a lot of times it just gets easier to not add to the scene, but just to kind of take a passive role and say like, all right, like the people who want to lead and take the spotlight, you go for it. I'm just going to hide out here in the back. I don't want to ruffle feathers. I don't want to like, and I think we almost lose ourselves in that process. And I think that's a challenging thing of learning how to respond to other people, is that it is finding that balance of being your fullest self, being seen, being present, but without making it all about you, without taking it over. Like, it doesn't have to be a dramatic leader follower. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yeah, it does.
So
yeah, I mean, well, I was just like with improv, I mean, and, you know, like we talked about my educational background, like the rule that I was taught was that when you're having a conversation with someone, that you're listening 80% of the time, you know, and that's just with two people. And so I keep that in mind. And then with more advanced classes, like, okay, if you've got three people, five people on stage, like, you should just naturally be talking less.
Yeah. I think that is one of the hardest things, is just coming out of our own brain and realizing that, I think in a way, we as adults are trying to think of other people. Like, we don't want to be embarrassing. We don't want to cause a scene. But it's also so much thinking of ourselves. Like, we're so immersed in what am I going to say next? What are people going to think about me? How am I going to come off? That we're missing the moment that we're in. And we're missing the chance to truly engage and be open to a new idea. Maybe someone has a way of seeing the world that we've never considered before. And
Yeah.
I think that's a challenge. So as you're teaching people through these different classes, what are some ways to pay attention to the other person to kind of get more in sync with being able to respond better?
Yeah. I mean, I do want to address that like the classes that we have are so special to me because, I mean, I get to go through a lot of them and each one is so unique. And the reason that it is so unique is because of the people that are there, right? Like the class that we're starting this coming Tuesday is going to be completely different than the one we just ended. Not necessarily better or worse, but certainly different. And it's because of the people that were there. And so when we make a story or we make a scene or we play a game, you know, whether we get to an outcome or the end of it, whatever it is, like it was special because of the two or three or four people that were playing that game. And it like is never going to happen exactly that way again. I think about it like a trip, you know, you go on like a really special trip when you're, you know, 18, 19 years old with your friends, and then you try and recreate it. And it's never the same. Like it was special that one time. And if you try to recreate it, it's always going to be different. And that's okay. It can even be better, but it's not going to be the same. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And then sorry to get off on that tangent. What was the original question though?
Tips for responding to other people or being able to kind of better get on the same page with someone else.
Yeah, that was not a great response. I mean, the things that we practice are their sentence or what they're saying before you start to generate your thoughts. And what I just did is a perfect example of what not to do. You were not done talking, and I was already like, I've got to talk about this other thing, and you hadn't finished talking, and so I missed it. I didn't hear it, right? And so again, I'm not a perfect improviser. I'm not even a great improviser. I'm just the guy that like has kept it going in Cedar Rapids. But again, like those things that we practice in class are just to move us along, right? It's progress. We're trying to get better at those things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that. That was one of the things you shared on the first week of class, was that this was never going to be replicated. Like there is an absolute uniqueness just based on the dynamics of who is in the class. And I think about that a lot just in everyday life. I think that so many people feel like, well, if someone is talking into a microphone or performing on a stage, it's because somehow like God has appointed them with some kind of magical ability to share their story with others that isn't universally bestowed. And it just isn't true. I think that every single human has a unique story and experience that is worth sharing. I think that is the best gift that you can give someone, is to be fully yourself, because that gives them permission to be fully themselves. And I think it's important too, because, you know, I made the joke about feeling better when someone sucked at improv, but it's true. I think that we don't just need the experts who are way ahead on the finish line. We need the people who are showing up and showing what it looks like to be taking baby steps, because ultimately it's in the showing up and the practicing it every day. Like that's where the real impact happens. That's great to see someone like, you know, Taylor Swift, who is making billions and shining on the stage and living her dream life. That's awesome. But I'm going to be way more impacted by someone who I'm having a coffee conversation with, where I can actually see myself doing whatever it is that they're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel the same way. I mean, that's why, you know, I started this was because when, you know, the old model, when we were with TCR, they have a lot of really cool things that are going on and we wanted to do more, and there just wasn't the capacity for that at, at TCR. So we were like, well, we'll start doing our own thing. And again, like I'm not the guy. Everybody wanted to do more. All of my friends, the improvisers, they wanted to have more classes. They wanted to have more opportunities to perform, and no one was doing anything about it. So I was like, well, I'll get some things going. I'm not that guy, but I've just kept it going. And I recognize that there are more talented people. There's better teachers right here in Cedar Rapids, but I've just kept it going, and I'm trying to get better myself.
Yeah. I think ultimately that's what the world needs, though, is just people who are willing to say yes and to make it actually happen. I think showing up is where the success is.
Yeah.
Well, certainly appreciate everything that you're doing in the community. For anyone listening, 10 out of 10 recommend pushing through your fears and trying an improv class. Anthony, thank you so much for sharing your time and expertise. Would love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at embracetheish@gmail.com or hang out with us online at successfulish.com or Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn at embracetheish.
Success and failure, none of the opposite ends. Curveball hits, gotta know where to bend. The attitude will affect destination. And if you determine when you're gonna make it. Live between successes makes life rich. Living every moment, successful-ish. Live between successes makes life rich. Living every moment, successful-ish. Hey,
successful-ish. Another day, another task. Think fast with a whole nother mission complete.
I'm successful-ish.
Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see.
I'm successful-ish.
Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve.
Successful-ish.
Lose a stack, get it back. Reinvest, hope with, then I roll up my sleeve.
I'm successful-ish.
Another day, another task. Think fast with a whole nother mission complete.
Successful-ish.
Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see.
I'm successful-ish.
Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve.
Successful-ish.
Lose a stack, get it back. Reinvest, hope with, then I roll up my sleeve.
Hey. All this weight on my arms, need both flex. In this race, put behind, need more steps. Had to swear the learning curve, hope I don't crash. Hit your nerves when reserves got low cash. When I fail, realize that it won't last. You made it through in the past, just look back. Successful-ish, you can see how it contrasts. Failures and wins, use the past and I bounce back.
You can never win if you never go and do it. Failure is a hard road, rarely ever cruising. Embracing all my wins with a handful of losing. Expect the drought season when the plan's going fluent. I can never really fail, it's all how you view it. It's all a lesson, just depends how you use it. Gather all the data and keep it all exclusive. Never ending journey and the growth is therapeutic. My identity is not in what you see, I am the better me. Mistakes others make, I see. Have been teaching me. Compare yourself to others is an insult to tragedy. We were made unique, gotta use a gift collectively. Broke down my goals and a few look toesome. Can't take them back cause you already spoke them. Easily regressive, you don't stay focused. Focus, live between success and emotion.
Successful. Another day, another task. Think fast with a whole nother mission complete.
I'm successful-ish.
Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see.
I'm successful-ish.
Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve.
Successful-ish.
Lose a stack, get it back. Reinvest, hope with, then I roll up my sleeve.
I'm successful-ish.
Another day, another task. Think fast with a whole nother mission complete.
Successful-ish.
Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see.
I'm successful-ish.
Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve.
Successful-ish.
Lose a stack, get it back. Reinvest, hope with, then I roll up my sleeve.